So we are in a very precarious position in this country. We need political change, but we also need to resolve to resist.
Welcome back to another episode of Stand on Guard. I am your host, David Creighton. And I promised a little bit of commentary, discussion about the Online Harms Act this week. I know you're saying, oh, we've heard so much about it. From me, maybe, but not from the people we need to hear about this from, including the official opposition, more of the media, not just myself and other new media, not just John Carpe of the Justice Center, who's doing a heck of a good job keeping this issue front and center. But we need to hear from the legacy media because, yeah, they're still important for those people who watch the CBC News at night and haven't got a clue this thing is coming. They haven't got a clue. I'm telling you, this is the most underreported, worst bill in history, if it's possible to say that. So what got me started on this morning? And this will be two parts. We can't show everything today. But what I want to do is examine how is the world looking at Canada? What's the global outlook at what Canada is doing with this online harms bill? And I call it the thought crimes bill because that seems to get people's attention. Online harms bill is so ridiculous. It sounds innocuous, almost insouciant, like it's carefree. It's just we're looking after the kids. We're making sure that kids aren't harmed. And of course, that's a veneer to this bill. It is simply the periphery to make it palatable to the public who will say, well, we can't be opposed to something that's protecting children, that's about stopping child pornography, that's about preventing revenge porn, that's about stopping hate speech. We already have laws in place for those things. And listen to this clip from Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland when she's asked about last weekend's pro-Hamas protest in Ottawa. A lot of horrible things were said about Israel, about Jews. And she's asked by a CBC reporter about this. And I'll tell you why I'm showing this to you after I'm done.
CBC, over the weekend, protesters in Ottawa were heard chanting, among other things, long live October 7th, and October 7th is proof that we are almost free. Is this hate speech?
I wasn't in Ottawa over the weekend, and I'm not aware of those specific reports, and so it would be just wrong of me to comment on something that I am not specifically aware of. What I will say is today is a time in Canada when anti-Semitism and Islamophobia are on the rise. When we have there are a lot of Canadians who are not feeling safe.
In the first place, the question and the event had nothing to do with Islamophobia. It was about anti-Semitism, and she doesn't seem to get that. In the second place, if you're not in Ottawa over the weekend, Chrystia, you know, you can always watch the news, even the news you like CBC, CTV Global. They actually covered this protest fairly well, and it was very well publicized. So you don't have to be in Ottawa to catch up on the news. And apparently she did later that day because she looked pretty stupid not knowing what was happening in Ottawa because she's here for most of her life as the finance minister. And she did apparently watch some video clips and she did come around to condemning it. But what does that tell you? That what happens when we have an online harms bill where people are going to be not only ranting and raving at each other with hate speech, but wanting everybody charged. We're going to fill the jails with people charged with hate speech because we'll have, in this case, we'll have the pro-Israel people accusing the pro-Hamas people of hate speech, and the pro-Hamas people will accuse the pro-Israel people of hate speech, and it'll go back and forth, and nobody will ever learn anything in the process, and we will just have incredible escalation in charges and people potentially going to jail for what they say. But that only proves from what has happened here, because the Ottawa police are looking into laying some hate speech charges. So therefore, we already have hate speech laws in place. What do we need an Online Harms Act for? If it's not about silencing free speech entirely, if it's not about jailing people for what they say, and yes, in fact, for jailing people for what they think and what they could potentially say. That's why the Online Harms Act is so odious. It is so nefarious, because it attempts to guess what people are thinking and could say. And it's just making an already bad situation worse. And I want to say again, I'm sick to death of these protests, because it's all a sham. It's a farce. We've got Antifa, the far left, protesting with these pro-Hamas people who are pretending to be good Muslims and ranting and raving against Israel, but yet they're protesting with Antifa people who don't agree with Muslims on just about anything. We're being played here by the globalists. These protests are just about dividing Canadians, keeping people fighting over things they can't adjudicate, they can't solve. So we don't go after the issues that we can solve, such as gender ideology in the schools. That's why we're having another million-person march in September. We're going to get some religious unity, and we're going to focus on the issues that really do matter. And we're going to stop fighting over this crap of a foreign war that we have no jurisdiction over in this country. So I want to make that point again, because I'm sick to death of these protests, and I'm sick to death of the antipathy they're causing between people who should be getting along because they really do agree on most basic things. And if these people want to make stupid, horrible, vile statements about Israel, there are already laws in place for that. We don't have to start charging people on the internet for saying offensive things or things that are deemed offensive. Anyway, I wanted to examine how the world is looking at the Online Harms Act, because as I've told you before, when I speak to Americans that I work with at the post-millennial or human events, they thought I was kidding about this bill, that it was that bad, that it was just the conservatives in Canada making it up because this is something Trudeau might do if it was a parody of Justin Trudeau. But no, it's true. And let's listen to how this thing is playing out.
All of our democracies, and every democracy around the world, we are seeing a rising movements of either authoritarian populism or skepticism about democracy itself.
So Justin Trudeau says these comments almost, he says them with a straight face, as if he doesn't realize what's happening in his own country being led by him to clamp down on freedoms, the authoritarianism that he is presiding over in Canada.
There is out there a deliberate undermining of mainstream media. There are the conspiracy theorists, there are the social media drivers who are trying to do everything they can to keep people in their little filter bubbles, to prevent people from actually agreeing on a common set of facts, the way, you know, the CBC and CTV, when they were our only sources of news, you know, used to and Global used to project.
So before we get to this New York Times piece I want you to have a look at here. Canada wants to regulate online content. Critics say it goes too far. So the New York Times is covering this, and they're saying, whoa, Canada's up to something here. Looks like Justin Trudeau's at it again. Yeah, and here's Trudeau saying, oh, why can't we live in a world? Yes, yes. Why can't we live in that world where we just had the mainstream media? We had three, maybe four networks, and we had maybe three national papers, and every major city had a daily or two. Yeah, we had this sun chain for those blue-collar conservatives, and the Globe and Mail used to be for those upper-class conservatives, but largely the rest of the media was on the Liberal Party side, on Justin's side. Why can't we go back to those halcyon days? And that's where Justin Trudeau is coming from. And of course, he is a bit mad. He is a bit insane to suggest that we can somehow turn the clock back. So there's no new media, that there's no media on the internet. There's no independent media like the station you're watching now. It's all going to disappear. And that's really what he wants to do, to make it disappear through online legislation or legislation against the online. So let's go back to this here. So when the New York Times raises the red flag, you know there's something going on here. New York Post, a little more conservative than the New York Times.
We're not quite Canada yet. You know, we don't have Pierre Trudeau wanting to put people in prison for life for hate speech. But close.
Just look at our neighbor to the north, Canada. There, free speech is under Cuban-like assault. If the government of leftist Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has its way, not only will your right to write and speak what's on your mind be severely restricted, but also the government can jail you if it suspects you might say something that is unlawful. You heard that right. The mere suspicion that you might mouth or write words or phrases that the government deems to be unlawful is grounds to arrest you. Who could have imagined that what George Orwell labeled thought crimes in his classic novel 1984 about nightmarish life in a totalitarian world would be pursued by Canada of all places?
Now, before we get to Great Britain's response to this, of course, Great Britain has its Online Safety Act, which was the title of Canada's legislation until somebody decided, hey, we better change the name of this because there's been too much publicity about the Online Safety Act being dangerous. So they shifted the focus, not only in the name, but they shifted the focus of the legislation from disinformation, misinformation, and malinformation to hate speech and safety, child safety. They changed the focus to something that people could say, oh, that sounds good. So you look at these clips from the United States. Yeah, Americans are waking up. This is my old friend, Steve Forbes, you know, former Republican presidential candidate. He ran for the Republican nomination at least once, I think maybe twice. Good guy. His media is out there fighting for the right things. And Steve has noticed what's going on in Canada. You know, we always say Americans are very insular. They tend not to look beyond their own borders. Steve Forbes is an exception to that supposed rule. And he's watching very closely because he knows if it can happen in Canada, it can happen in the United States. And if it does happen in Canada, it usually does happen in the United States about 2 or 3, maybe 5 years later. You know, we saw this with things like same-sex marriage, which was at one time unthinkable in the United States. It became law in Canada, and it just sort of migrated across the border. And there's other issues, usually social issues, that this happens with. And Steve Forbes understands the danger of Canada being this social experimentation laboratory where this stuff happens first and it gets exported to the United States. So they didn't want thought crimes. The good thing is in the United States, they have a constitution that's quite explicit and quite clear about freedom of speech. Our Charter of Rights is not so clear about freedom of speech because it has that huge caveat, that huge disclaimer, that huge exception, which Forbes actually outlines in the longer interview, which says reasonable. There are reasonable restraints. There are reasonable exceptions to free speech in Canada. And that's a danger. So we might be in some trouble there. Let's listen to what they're saying in Great Britain.
Trudeau's crusade against bullying, but his government's online harms bill could turn out to be the most sweeping restriction on freedom of speech that Canada has ever seen. The proposed law, Bill C-63, has provisions to jail Canadians for certain speech crimes. Anyone who advocates for genocide can face life imprisonment, the same penalty as murder. You can even be prosecuted for things that you haven't said. A judge can impose fines and even issue a house arrest warrant if they believe that there are grounds to suspect that someone will commit an offence. Author Margaret Atwood slammed the bill as Orwellian on X, writing, "The possibilities for revenge false accusations plus thought crime stuff are so inviting. Trudeau's Orwellian online harms bill." Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal columnist Michael Taub has compared the bill to the film Minority Report. But according to the National Post, 70% of Canadians back action to make online platforms safer, but only 41% believe that this bill will be successful. And I think that the bill kind of, it's big enough that you look at one part of it and you think that's a great initiative. And then you look at the other part in the fine lines and you say, okay, that's a little bit much, but I want to get into this part where a judge can put you, you know, under house arrest for things that they think that you might say. Now that is a can of worms. How are they going to manage that?
Well, they're not, are they? I mean, short answer, it's impossible. But it opens up, as you say, a can of worms. I mean, how you begin to even deliberate on something like this. It seems like a very fundamental change of law that if they were going to go into that kind of direction, you would hope that there would be some kind of proper public debate on it, because it really is setting a brand new precedent. It shouldn't be something that is smuggled into a very large, and actually I had a read of the bill myself, and what I found quite remarkable was that, kind of as you were saying there, there were lots of very innocuous, very sensible sounding bits, and then often kind of buried in quite boring legalistic language were things that you had to read them twice and be like, oh my God, they surely not. It's not the time to be bringing in some sweeping change of precedent into the legal system.
Now, before we continue here, you can see that there's a careful dawning on the media in Great Britain that this is something very special, if you will, very unique to Canada. And it's probably the most repressive legislation against free speech in the world, at least for a democratic country or a country that's supposedly still democratic. Let's listen to some more and we will round out our coverage of how Great Britain is viewing this.
Justin Trudeau's new C-63 bill will allow the Canadian government to imprison people for life in order to protect children or to imprison political opponents. What do you think Justin Trudeau and the globalists are more interested in?
We need to make sure, and I think we can all agree, we need to protect our kids online.
Justin Trudeau, with his various image issues, should not be wearing black leather gloves. I suppose it's good that it's on the hand rather than the face, given that it's Justin Trudeau, but it's a bit too Gestapo for someone who literally awards Nazis in Parliament and evokes unnecessary emergency acts, isn't it?
The proposed bill is aimed at online companies.
They've put a hooded figure that looks like them people at Nick C-3PO and RTD2 in the first Star Wars film.
And expected to target hate speech, terrorist content, child exploitation, and the sharing of non-consensual images, both real and AI-generated.
I bet some of those things there are already laws for, like, firstly, aren't there? Like, terrorism, I think, is already illegal. I think they're already not supposed to be a paedophile. They aren't real required laws. This is what we're going to do is legitimize censorship by offering you things that you'll agree with, like you want your children safe, you don't agree with hatred, and you don't agree with terrorism. Yep, that's everyone in the world thinks that, except for a small marginal lunatics. And then they're going to use that to go, that was critical of, for example, the trucker protest. If we look at their actions and look at what they actually care about, they care about being able to freeze people's bank accounts, care about being able to unperson and shut down dissenting voices and seize control of the media. Obvious what the agenda is. This is absolute bunk.
All with a significant focus on child safety. The Conservatives say it's an attempt to censor Canadians, while others hope for even stronger digital protections than those expected in the bill.
Do you know that one of the penalties is life imprisonment? How much stronger can you go than life imprisonment? Justin Trudeau will come round your house and strangle you to death in those black gloves of his while singing Swanee. Swanee.
Legislation like this already exists in several other countries, like the UK, Australia, and the EU.
What a coincidence. Almost as if these bills are being passed everywhere, as if it's some sort of coordinated global effort. Now, look, you could say more materially and more skeptically if you want to be all reasonable about it, that the pandemic was a global problem, and so having a global response to a global problem is one interpretation, and the internet is a global phenomenon, so having a global response is in some ways sensible. As long as that response is absolutely derived from referenda, as long as it's the response that people want. I mean, as a parent at the moment, when I think, who do I want in charge of protecting my children when it comes to online safety, and basically actually all forms of safety? Me! That's who's in charge of it. Me, my wife, and people I trust. It's not like...
This is a point that John Carpe makes all the time about ultimately this bill is supposed to be about protecting children. That's what the, as I said, that's the veneer of this bill. And this is how the liberals are selling it. But as Russell Brandt and John Carpe have both said, that's your responsibility about what your children are watching. What is the state doing interfering in the internet activity of your family? But they want to insert themselves into everything you say or do, clearly.
Justin Trudeau, get your gloves on. The kids are playing up. I don't want them lot involved in any way. Obviously, the reason that we're concerned about this raft of legislative measures across the world, Ireland, our country, the UK, Canada, EU, as it was listed in the news report, is because of the potential to misuse these laws to impose control on the population of the country. The people that are really regarded as terrorists, we know this because they use techniques, personnel, agencies, technology that have previously been used on terrorists on domestic populations now. It's common, it's global, it's ubiquitous.
I think now that we're increasingly finding ourselves in the group, in the grip of those, that narrow group of people who would rather that none of that disagreement and discussion and debate was happening. Mm-hmm. They just want to hear everyone say, and they want to think and be persuaded that everyone thinks the way that they do.
Just a quick interjection here. This, of course, is my good friend Neil Oliver, who was on my show recently, specifically to discuss the Online Harms Act, vis-a-vis what they have produced in Scotland, which is a hate speech bill, which has caused chaos in that country, as people have been charging each other and counter charges. And it is absolute lunacy. But Neil is a fighter for free speech. He's out there every day expressing his opinion on this, and we need fighters like him. So it was so grateful to have him on the show.
And this, it's existential. It's an existential crisis. And that's what's underpinning all this bit about coming up with a term of words like stirring up hatred. It's absolute yes. Nonsense.
So that ends our first look at the global perspective on the Online Harms Bill. And it's worrisome, to say the least. People are looking at Canada either as a laughingstock, as a place that has deserted, has forfeited its democratic rights, or is a very dangerous place where George Orwell is not a warning, but a plan. This is something conservative leader Pierre Poilievre said when he was addressing the Canada Strong and Free conference about 2 weeks ago. And thank God he finally opened his mouth about this bill and was clear and explicit in his opposition to it. He needs to do that every day, or at least once a week. But I was glad to see him do that before that audience, which, believe me, is by no means necessarily an audience that is actually that conservative or libertarian, and that is actually that attuned to free speech. And we'll learn a bit more about that tomorrow. Where is the opposition coming from in Canada to this bill, and where is it not coming from? And how weak is some of the conservative opposition to it. We'll examine that tomorrow. But thanks for joining me today. I encourage you to support this station. Please like, give it a thumbs up, subscribe if you haven't. And you might need to resubscribe because, it does happen all the time. And I would add again, we just got these wonderful magnets. And yes, you can get them at the store. And I showed you the coffee cup yesterday. We're getting another size of that. That's available. We have the hoodies and we have the t-shirts, Resolve to Resist t-shirts, the Stand on Guard t-shirts, and Think While It's Still Legal. Couldn't be a more relevant t-shirt to be wearing this year as we're on the precipice of possibly losing our free speech. Let's keep fighting. Let's resolve to resist. Let's fight back. Let's keep getting people educated about this bill and how dangerous it is. Thanks for watching today. I will be back again tomorrow with more about the online harms bill. Thank you. Thank you for watching this episode of Stand on Guard and being a part of the Creighton's Right channel. If you've watched this episode to this point, you've watched it all. And that's really important for a small station like this. We always say subscribe, hit the bell, be a part of the Creighton resistance. Resolve to resist. That's what we're doing. And if you become a subscriber, if you're a supporter of this station or a member through Substack, through YouTube, and now you can be a local as well, that's so important to us because I couldn't do this without you. I made a decision to become an independent journalist about a year ago because I wanted to bring all of my experience in the military, in journalism, to you. I don't promise anything I can't deliver. I don't offer clickbait. I offer truth. The truth is out there, and it's my job to bring that truth to light and to you. Thanks for being a part of the Creighton's Right resistance, and we'll see you again soon.
So we are in a very precarious position in this country. We need a political change, but we also need to resolve to resist.